podcast series for the EAS numeracy team to support the strategy. We're very lucky today to have Gaynor Brimble with us, who has many years of foundation phase experience. She's a challenge advisor for the EAS. So would you like to introduce yourself, Gaynor?
Oh, thank you, Sue. Yeah, my name, as you said, is Gaynor Brimble. I'm the lead for the foundation phase across the EAS. That involves supporting schools and settings, non-maintained settings, in delivering the foundation phase pedagogy to the best of everyone's abilities.
And we were just going to talk today about what maths looks like in the foundation phase, because there's so much out there at the moment and there's so much moving with the new curriculum. And it's really just wanted to pick your brains really about what you think is really important. So to you, what does maths look like in the foundation phase?
Well, first and foremost, it's fun. It should be firsthand. There should be practical experiences and it should be purposeful. It should almost look like they're not doing maths as such. And probably during this conversation, if you don't mind, I'm probably going to focus a lot on the early learning aspect of maths in the foundation phase.
And I would totally agree with you, because I think that the earlier steps are the most important. So they've got those building blocks working through the foundation phase.
Absolutely, Sue. And I think sometimes we overlook the importance of those fundamentals. We move too quickly to asking them to recognise and write numerals before they've really got to grips with, you know, what does one mean in every context? What is one? What is two? What's a circle? What patterns do I know? Can I see? All those sorts of things that they're going to experience before we actually move them on to, you know, calling them out as a name or writing them as a numeral. So, yeah, if that's OK with you, I'd rather focus
that's
on
brilliant.
That.
No, that's fantastic.
So if I go back, then we've got this this first-hand, practical, purposeful experiences going on. They rely heavily on the role of the adult within the environment, their ability to observe the play, because a lot of these mathematical concepts, the children will be exploring the concepts within their play. So when we think about the concepts of size and shape and capacity, quantity, measurement, you will see the children naturally exploring these within their play. What they might not have in the early stages is the language to describe it. And that's where the role of the adult comes in. I think as well, the areas of provision are important, so that they have, you know, good size sand pits and water tables with authentic resources that the children can explore what happens if you're pouring water into a large bucket or a small bucket, or if you're trying to move the sand with a spoon that's got holes in it. There's loads of things that are happening there. And that's not just maths then either, is it? Because that's just science, and science and maths concepts are linked. I think also we would need to think about the authentic opportunities that are on offer to the children. So I know that many schools now have introduced things like cooking stations, where we've got three-year-olds doing a much better job of baking cakes than ever I can. most of them have now block play areas. And again, block play is a fabulous resource for mathematical concepts building. And of course, we've got the outside. There are so many opportunities outside for the children to explore those concepts, to measure for real experiences, to feel the weight of different buckets, you know, full of leaves and then buckets full of acorns. There's going to be heavy and light. So they're embodying the concepts as well as learning the terms for them. And I know the other thing that's becoming very popular in schools now is the role of loose parts. Again, I think they're fabulous. I think they're open-ended resources, so they can be used in many different ways, in many different concepts, to explore many different concepts, actually. So a loose part, you might be doing quantity, you might be doing measurement, you might be doing capacity. So there's lots of things you can do with that loose part. Or you could use them for exploring shape and pattern making. So I think there's a wealth of resources that could be in the classroom. I've already said about the role of the adult, which I think is around language development. And that adult really has to notice and then understand and therefore support that concept development.
And I think, sorry, Gaynor, I'll just jump in there really with just that the adult supporting, it's that having the confidence and experience to jump in at the right time, isn't it?
Absolutely. And that's, there's a time to jump in. There's a time to sidle in alongside. And there's a time to just stand back and watch and interpret. So, yeah, it's a skilled occupation being an observer. It really is a skilled occupation. Just a little bit more on, you know, what does it look like in the foundation phase? So we've got maths everywhere. It's in all the areas of provision. I am not a fan of having a particular area that says the maths area. I think that gives the wrong message about the wideness of maths in terms of learning and the possibilities of maths learning. But also there are things that you would expect to see, you know, in the daily routines, whether they're lining up and you're counting or you're grouping things or you're when you're preparing snack, they're talking about halves and quarters as they cut up the sandwiches or the bananas. You know, there's loads of ways that you can get in some mathematical concepts while they're encountering their daily routines. And then I think the last bit for me on this section would be, you know, just look at your book corners. Have you got in there picture books that support mathematical concepts? Again, you know, not just counting. There are loads of lovely books, and I'm pretty sure, Sue, you'll have done lots of investigation and probably got a list as long as your arm now of books that would be useful to put in the book corner. But again, not just in the book corner. They could be books that are outside. They could be books that are next to the block play area. They could be books that are in the creative and investigative area, as we're calling them now. And then obviously there are other things that you might use in your daily routines, like the stories and songs and rhymes that children really, really like, you know, the finger rhymes, especially when the five little ducks went swimming one day and they visually see the five and then they take one away. So then they can see the four, you know, all those things. That's maths. That's maths learning in the early years.
We'll put in the links to the block play resources you've got, the playlist, and the links to websites which have got a full range of books that help with all areas of maths. So you mentioned earlier the importance of repetition and just revisiting and not moving on too quickly. So I really do believe that more time spent developing that conceptual understanding, even with our youngest learners, pays dividend moving forward. Like, how would you plan and ensure those skills are revisited regularly?
Right, I'm going to say something really dreadful now. I'm going to say it's not about planning in that finite, committing things to paper. I don't think that's what it is. I think you plan in your head and you plan your environment for where are the opportunities for the children to repeat this learning in those different contexts within my learning environment, indoors and out. So if we think about the fact that maths is everywhere, then we want children to develop that love of maths, that love of investigating what happens if, and you know, how many here, and that's bigger than this, or you know, this is heavier than that. And there is something that I'm really interested in called children's schematic learning. So, and those are described as repeated patterns of behaviour. So a child, and you'll recognise some of these, the child who likes to position all the dinosaurs, you know, in a long line, or they get the conkers and they position them in a circle, or they might do other things with them. Or the child that wants to transport all of your resources that you've kept very tidy in the tub, and they've got a special place, but they like to empty that tub, put it in a different container or in a bag that they found in the role play area and transport it somewhere else. And fill it up, empty it and fill it into a different container. So I would say that repetition is something that children are naturally driven to do. So again, we come back to the adults understanding the role of repetition. so that what we do is we look at what they're repeating, what that tells us about their learning, and how we can support them to repeat it in ever more connected ways. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, I'm strongly influenced by dear old Lev Vygotsky. I just love that concept of the adult who supports and guides. And again, I think what I would say is that we're all on a learning journey in terms of repetition. And if we think about what he said, it's about the interested and the more knowledgeable adults. I need guidance. I haven't needed guidance with using Teams and things. I've gone to my more knowledgeable adult, and I'm beginning to put the things together. So now I can do things on my own. You know, I can now drive a car without thinking about it. Quite dangerous. But when I'm making a cake, I have to follow the recipe. I have to keep going back to my instructions because I haven't overlearned that yet. Does that make sense to you? I don't know the question in terms of planning, though.
We're all learners. We're learners throughout our life. And I think it's allowing our youngest children to do that without pushing on too fast and making sure those paths are built so they know when it becomes part of their long-term memory rather than being there in this sort of working memory and things they have to do immediately.
Yeah. So what you're looking for is that notion of mastery, aren't you? And I think, again, that's another term that we need to go and explore. What does it mean, this mastery? And I'm going to keep saying that I really do think that young children need to spend longer periods of time in play that is not directed by the adults, but is supported by the adults. And one of the key aspects of that adult support and that mastery and that repetition is around providing the children with the language that they might not currently have.
Yeah.
Because that gives them the label for the thing that they're exploring. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's the experiences our learners have had, they're not going to know some of these maths words that we're introducing to them.
But also, just on that point as well, do you know what I think we do as well? I think we limit their learning to quite finite finite labels, I guess. I think what we tend to do, not everybody by any means, but sometimes, you know, when they come in, I'm thinking about nursery children, and we've got our 6 weeks to observe them and then to make a judgment on where we think they are using the FPP. Then we're looking for things like, can they name a circle, a square and a triangle? And then we give them circles, squares and triangles and say, you know, what's this? What's that called? And it's like there's more to a circle, a square and a triangle than what its name is. So I think that's what we need to do more of. We need to let them master the whole thing about what is a circle, what does it do, what can it not do, how are triangles different from circles, what is it about them in terms of pattern making, you know, all sorts of things that we can. You're not going to ask those questions, but you're going to see the children exploring those properties of shape and measures and size and position in their play. But we've got to be better at looking at the play and interpreting it from a mathematical viewpoint, from a mathematical lens. I think so.
And I think as well around this point is we tend to be a lot more confident with our language and literacy skills, and there's a lot of maths anxiety or maths fear out there that, you know, we tend to stick to the curriculum more so with the maths teaching. And it's, you know, realizing we do have the maths skills at that level, like we do in language, to be developing it, and it's having the confidence, I think, to just go with the learners.
And I think it's a really important point. And also, this has been said for a long, long time now. It seems to be okay to say, as an adult, I'm no good at maths. Yes. But you wouldn't say that to a child about you reading. You know, you wouldn't say, oh, I'm no good at reading, so, you know, I can't do that. Because it's not the right message to give, is it? But for some reason, we feel more happy to say, I'm not good at maths. But maybe that's because we've all, you know, a majority of us have had not good experiences of maths in the past. And maybe we didn't have enough time to to work on these fundamentals in a way that's meaningful and purposeful to us. So I think there's something to be said there. And the other thing I would say is, you know, if we don't know, though, it's okay to say, oh, I don't know, but where can we find out? Let's go and have a look. And that's good modelling. That's good modelling of learning. And I think, again, come back to the adult. The adult's role is to model good attitudes, dispositions to learning. You know, so cultivating curiosity, being playful, developing confidence, that kind of being ready and willing to participate fully in the learning, then the children are able to sort of come back with those attitudes too, that it's okay to make a mistake. You know, there's not a right answer to this. And also, you know, they're developing their working theories about what these things are, you know, how many. I can see that there are two there and there are two there, so that's the same. Two is the same, whether it's two pens or two cones. Two is also two eyes, it's two legs.
That's coming back to, again, what you were saying initially when we first, you know, started talking in the first question about the oneness of one, two-ness of two, and having all those opportunities to really embed that. So just like to, you've mentioned schema and you've spoken a lot about it in the previous question. Can you tell me more about it and how it impacts our youngest learners?
Oh, it's fascinating. It is absolutely fascinating. And it's been something that I knew about, I've researched, but it's becoming more and more important and apparent to me that we should in the early years be looking at it in greater detail. So basically, there's a long history of understanding of schemas or patterns of repeated behaviours. And there are some definite ones that teachers listening to this now will recognise. And I'm only going to do a few of them. So there is a rotation schema. So thinking about the circleness of circles. So the children will be interested in spinning and wheels and circles, but they also do it for themselves. So they're the children who like to spin around and run in circles. They like to twiddle. There's loads of things. So that rotation schema, you will see that a lot when they start to do their when they start, because it's quite a sophisticated mark making, but you will see them doing lots of rotation schema in their mark making, which is important when we're coming on later to write numbers and write letters in particular. If you think about the rotation, we need them to be able to go around and around and around for many of our letters, not so much our numbers, maybe 8 and 9. I'm just thinking off the top of my head now.
Yeah, exactly.
And a zero. Yeah, you're right. There's another schema I've talked about, which is, I described that earlier, those the transporting schema. So they will take a group of objects. They usually engage this with the enclosing schema as well, where they'll put them into a bag that they've got from the home corner, and then they'll take those objects, take them outside, and then put them into a different container. So that transportation schema, they also see transporting in terms of carrying things, moving things around. What happens if I move it from place to place? There's also, again, I described this one, the positional schema, where they like to place things. Now, positional schema is going to be really good later on for that notion of counting, one-to-one correspondence. We need one-to-one correspondence not only for maths, we need it for when we're reading words on a page. Yeah. And when we're looking at letters in a word. So this underlying principle is going to support their later learning in literacy and numeracy, which is really interesting, isn't it? You'll see the children in the block play who have an enclosing schema. So they'll build, but they like to make sure that when they're building, they have that sort of the four blocks with a space in the middle. And then maybe another four blocks with another space in the middle. And then if you've got loose parts next to it or small world, they might put the cows in one and the pigs. And they naturally do this. And the pigs in another. So they're already grouping.
Yeah.
And then there's another one called the enveloping schema. These are not all of them. I would suggest if people don't know about them, they really go out and read some people like Tina Bruce, Kathy Nutt-Brown, Stella Louis has fabulous resources that are really accessible to parents and teachers. But going back to the enveloping one, that's where this one would be good. You see the children who like to wrap either themselves up in materials, or you know, they like their coat and then they like something else on top of the coat, or they like to put loads and loads of scarves around themselves, or when they're over in the creative and investigative area, they like to cover the boxes or the paper with paint so that you can't see anything.
Right.
And all of that moves on to understanding about now I've lost the mathematical word. It's not capacity, it's the other one. Area, you know, when you need to know how much you need to cover something. So all of that, or nearly all of the schemas have an underlying mathematical concept that they're exploring, and I find that absolutely fascinating. We can't get away from that crucial role of the adult observing, but also the adult understanding what they're observing.
Yes.
And again, I think you've said it earlier on, in my opinion, I do think that we rush too quickly into introducing numbers and numerals and getting them to trace them over them when their little hands are shaking and you can see those wibbly wobbly lines over the tracing paper. And, you know, we think, oh, great, we're teaching them number one and number two and number three. Well, they might be able to recognise it by the end of 6 weeks, but do they really understand what number one represents and what number two represents and what number three represents?
And I think it's that spending the time, isn't it?
It is.
For numbers one to three initially, and really making sure they've got that understanding of what they are, the oneness, all those different things that support those early steps, and then moving through the numbers before going up to counting to 20, counting to 100.
Yeah, and also those that, you know, just focusing on those early steps. And if you're focusing on things like noticing if they can do repeated patterns with these loops parts and or they make their own patterns up, then you can see how easy it will be for the children later on. That number square can be a source of fabulous fascination for the children who understand how to look for patterns.
Yes.
But if they can't look for patterns because they haven't spent time looking for patterns, then that 100 square is a bit like me looking at Chinese calligraphy. You know, I have no idea where to start. I can look for patterns, but they might not make sense to me because I haven't got enough background knowledge. So, you know, even if we took it from there, so we go, all right, so to look at a number square, 100 square, what do the children need to be able to do beyond counting? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Because if they have to do that, then they're not ready for a number square, are they?
No. So there's something I wanted to ask you that I'm really interested in, is the idea that we are born problem solvers. So how can we ensure we encourage this when learners start at school and help them to build on their exploration skills? How can we really sort of develop those or support them with their inquiry and those sorts of skills there?
Yeah, I think the best way to start is you've got to start by seeing them as capable and competent learners. You've got to start with seeing them as being endlessly curious. And they have a million, probably more than a million questions in their heads. And those questions might be verbalized or they might be embodied in their actions. And we've got to see that, you know. I think... there's a danger that we don't recognise the problem solving that they're doing within their play, and that, you know, we talk about teaching children thinking skills.
Yeah.
And again, I think you've got to notice, you've got to start saying, actually, these children are thinking. Blimey, he's really thinking out how to work that out. They're working together on this problem. I'm going to use the block play as another example. You know, they're in the block play. They want to get higher. They're asking each other, or they're telling each other, hold on, let me just, you know, wait a minute, and put this one here. So they're thinking all the time. But again, I think we're dreadful sometimes as teachers. We think we have to teach things in a very formal, paper-based or didactic way, whereas really I think How do you support and encourage problem solving and thinking? Well, you give them open-ended resources that supports that problem solving and thinking. So that, again, we come back to why loose parts are important, why being outside and making dens or creating habitats or whatever it is, I've seen some great things recently where children are starting to, you know, make their own bird boxes. They're using maths, they're using tools in the woodwork area. There's loads of wood, I didn't put woodwork in actually, thinking that. You know, they're using their maths there. So I think that we might, some of us, not all of us, I've got to say, I think what I see on Twitter, which, you know, I'm on almost 12 hours a day, I see fabulous examples of teachers and schools using authentic resources, first-hand experiences, loose parts, being outside, as ways to encourage children to think and problem solve for themselves. And I think, again, it goes back to the idea of, if you have embodied problem solving and thinking physically, you know, manipulating things, moving things around and fitting things together, or looking at making sure that everybody's got enough grapes, you know, that you haven't got more than me and all those sorts of things, then when we come on later to talk about the things that they're going to be using in terms of the more, what do we call them? I call them still the four rules of number. That's how old I am. It's not awful. But when they come up, they'll understand it better because they've embodied it and they've practiced it for themselves.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And one more thing before I let you draw breath and myself. I think, again, it's around the adults asking excellent open-ended questions, or that bit of siling it up to them and wondering alongside them and supporting them to develop their thinking with using the languages of I wonder what will happen if, what happens when you do that, will it change if we do this, shall we find out, you know, those, that sort of language that is exploratory.
Definitely there. It's just we've got quite a lot to think about now, just with the questions we've been through and the discussions we've been having around this, our earliest learners. So I just wondered if you could sort of summarise it for me with some just real take home thoughts for people listening to this that they can go back and think about.
Well, my first take home thought is, I hope I haven't spoken too quickly. So they're going, what did she say? What did she say? What did she say? but also, I think, no, first and foremost, I would say, you know, just do a tiny bit of reflection on your approach to mathematical learning. And I'm saying mathematical learning all the time rather than maths, because I think we need to think of maths in its broadest sense. Again, not just number, shape, space, pattern, position, all of, and, you know, I've been doing more research. This has become my new baby. I love it. I'm doing more research, and there is research to say that children who have better understanding of shape, space and position actually go on to be better mathematicians. So it's not the numerical aspect that makes them better mathematicians. More research. I would say to you, you know, as you go home tonight on a Friday, consider your environment, indoors and out. Where are the opportunities for the children to richly explore maths and apply their numeracy skills? You know, so I didn't even mention in the role play area. Have they got opportunities there to use their maths in meaningful ways? Or I keep saying blocks, but even in the creative area, you know, have you got ways of exploring symmetry or pattern that goes beyond, dare I say, the two or three splodges on half a page, which you then push together and say, see, it's the same, when they haven't really understood the concept of same anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So are your areas rich in maths learning, or at the moment, have you, and I don't mind, I'm not saying don't have a maths area where you have your resources and things like that, but it's a bit like the writing table for me. I think it should be everywhere, and I think they should have access to the resources that they need, that they can go and select and move to the places that they want. The other thing I would say is, do you use those precious adults in the best way you can? And I don't believe, I really don't believe that the best way is to have them sat at a table, colouring in some sheets, or, you know, helping the children to match, you know, the pig on the left with the pig on the right, whatever it is, I don't think that's the best use of adults. I really think the best use of adults is around what we just talked about, developing their thinking and their language, because maths has very particular language. It's a very particular language, and they have to be, you have to be precise in that use of language in maths, whereas you don't have to be as, you know, we've got many more words in English to use for different things, but in maths you have to be very precise. And then one more thing I would say is, just ask yourself, do your children enjoy it? Do you see them really enjoying what they're doing with their mathematical learning?
I think that's the big point, isn't it? Are they enjoying it? And, you know, we're doing a lot at the moment about looking at those born problem solvers. And if we follow their line of inquiry, they are more engaged in it and starting to develop that love for maths, really, which is what we want.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to thank you for joining me today to talk about this. And there's definitely some food for thought for practitioners. I will pop the links into all the things you've mentioned. I'll pop the links in so anyone listening to this podcast will be able to access that material easily following this session. But thank you very much, Dana.